I am constantly blown away by stories of adventure I hear when you learn more about the person and about the circumstances that they did the adventure. I'm blown away that people saw an opportunity in their life and just took it. It is not given to you most of the time. And for Alinka here, that is certainly not the case. She saw a window of opportunity, a moment in time to do something that she had been dreaming about for over 15 years. She did it despite her spouse, her husband, not wanting her to do it and not knowing if she could. She went for it. And it's not by any means what she does all the time, but it was just this moment. This thing came together and she went for it. And so I love that because a lot of us think, you know, it's so easy for some of the people on this show to make these adventures happen. But I've learned from over 500 interviews or so, that's absolutely not the case. I mean, even Bear Grylls, who we talked to last week, even he said that he has to consciously make time for adventure and time in nature. And in fact, we had a conversation in New York City. He spent some time in Central Park that morning just to be around some trees, he said. So if it's important enough for someone like Bear Grylls to make time for and something they have to be conscious about, how much more so for the rest of us? And I love Alinka's story. We're here today to talk about her book, which is called She Rides, and about that story of doing that bike trip, which was from Lake Tahoe, California, where she lives, all the way down to the southern tip of the Baja Peninsula in Mexico, doing this journey alone. Scary. Her world was crashing down around her, and she's decided an adventure was what she needed. And so we're going to talk about that. We intentionally don't get into tons of stories about the adventure itself, but kind of peripheral stuff like I tend to do when we have someone who has a book on. I don't want to reveal too much, but it's a great book. I've been reading it. Really enjoyed just kind of the people she meets, the things she talks about, the preparation ahead of time, and kind of the circumstances of life and why we even do adventures in the first place. So I encourage you to check it out. You can follow her anywhere listed in the show notes. You can find the book on her website. Prefer getting the book from an independent bookstore first before looking on the big websites that we all know. All right, let's go ahead and jump in. All right, folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. You heard a little bit of Alinka's story in the intro, but we're going to welcome her right now to the episode. And Alinka, welcome to the show. How's it going?
It's awesome. So excited to be here with you and your listeners. I'm really honored. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, when I started reading your book and getting into this story, it's the perfect story and the perfect kind of episode of what we talk about here. Just people doing adventures, things that may have, you know, been in their mind for a long time. Life is happening, normal life is happening all around the adventure and before and after. And it seems, one hand, so amazing and inspiring and awesome. And on the other hand, so relatable too. So there's so much about your story I love and I can't wait to dive in. But what I always ask first is, where are you coming from? And if that's not home, where's home for you?
Well, you know, that's a pretty wide question for someone who is constantly on a search for what the meaning of that word is. And we all have our own ways of relating to that. But long story short, I grew up in former Yugoslavia, in a small little country on a northwest corner in Slovenia, bordering Italy and Austria. It's a beautiful place, and in the mountains, lots of lakes and rivers. We have even a small coastline. That is my home, and I will always refer to that as home. But as we age, you know, the meaning of that changes as well, because when I was 20 years old, I moved to Tahoe by default, and started my own family in Lake Tahoe, California, in beautiful mountains, because it was very reminiscent of where I grew up. I was a skier, a climber, and I loved the spirit of what people did there, and it just was kind of written on my skin. So I call that my home as well. And then as things progressed even further, I needed to get away and find my sanctuary in Baja California on the Sea of Cortez. So that in a way is my home as well in a physical sense, but I really think that home is in a nutshell to where your people are.
So your people are all over the place is what you're saying. Home is a little bit of everywhere for you. A little bit of a connection there. I was just in San Diego, right across from Tijuana, not quite Baja, but right at the north side of the Baja Peninsula. So I was right there on the beach for Oceanside, an Oceanside Ironman event. That's the company I work for, is partnered with them. And then I immediately had to go to Sacramento for an event. While I was there, I drove up to Tahoe and saw just the record-breaking amount of snow. So kind of what you're talking about, I got to see those two worlds that you get to enjoy in those two places you call home very recently, like last week. They're so different. It was amazing just how different they both were within days of each other. One is beachy, sunny, hot. The other one experiencing literally 60 feet of snow. It was unbelievable. Is that whiplash for you, having to go back and forth between those two worlds?
A whiplash. Right now, I definitely feel anxiety about going back to Tahoe just because we are buried in snow. Even though that I am a snow person, I also love the ocean and the sun. And we cannot even see our house yet. It's buried above the roof. So jeez, it's going to be a little different coming home this year. But it looks like at least the SORM system now has redirected, and we're in for some dry and warm weather. So the snow is melting. It's going to be, I think it's exciting that we have so much snow, because it's great for the water situation in California and fires and everything else that we're dealing with it. But it's extreme. I won't lie. I'm a little bit nervous about driving home, but I'm excited because, like I said earlier, that is where my people are. That is where my kids are. I'm looking forward to see my kids and my grandkids. And when you say grandkids, that makes me sound like I'm very old, but I don't feel like it. I don't feel old.
No, it's just a number. I know you've got some grandkids, and that's what another reason I'm excited to talk to you is the time of life you did this adventure. But there's a lot leading up to it. There's a lot that leads up to this extreme, amazing experience. And I want to go all the way back to a really pivotal time of your life, the moment you met Reinhold Messner, iconic, legendary climber and mountaineer. But before we even jump there, I know that was a really big turning point in your life. What kind of household did you grow up into? Were your parents adventurous? Did they take you camping? Did they take you out in the Alps? What was growing up like?
You know, I had such an amazing childhood. I grew up in a very active family. My mom was a travel agent, and she traveled a lot for work, and I got to go travel with her on some of the trips to Venice and Salzburg and Vienna and places that she guided trips. But it was my dad who literally dragged me into the mountains, sometimes kicking and screaming. You know, when you're little, you don't necessarily want to walk up the hill so much. But there was always reward in the end. And he always nurtured me in the mountains. We grew up, I have a brother who's just a year older than me. We were little ski brats. We have had a glacier moraine hills behind our house, and we skied every opportunity we had. And then we were also on a ski team. So skiing and mountaineering is basically a way of life. And I am just very fortunate that I was able to be introduced to that at a very early age. I also grew up, 60s and 70s were the golden era of Slovenian alpinism. Our climbers were coming back from scaling big routes all over the world, and especially in the Himalayas. And the mountaineers and mountain climbers were always my heroes. My dad knew the organizers of the event when Reinhold Messner and Peter Haveler came back from climbing Mount Everest without oxygen, which at that time that was considered an impossibility. You know, I was 14, I was a little girl, and I got to meet this giant of the mountains, and he's a very real person. He's kind. Actually, I was just in Slovenia this past fall, and I got to see Reinhold Messner in Ljubljana, which is the capital of Slovenia, for his final goodbye tour. It was kind of a full circle for me, for someone who had such an amazing influence in my life.
Can you compare him? What level of fame and celebrity would you say he is for that region of the world? Maybe compared to somebody here, like how big are these crowds he's drawing? How is he regarded in culture?
If you compare it to the biggest baseball and football stars in Europe, he is the top of the top as far as not just the mountaineer. He is a great persona of, he wrote many books. He influenced a lot of nature conservancy. He's a rock star, kind of a god to a lot of younger mountaineers. But he has been also critical of some of the new ways of climbing and scaling the mountains, and especially what's going on in the Everest area, which I used to dream to be the Slovenian woman to climb Everest. That was one of my big aspirations. And I look at what's going on that mountain now, and the Sherpas do all the work. And Meisner has been quite critical of that as well. Traditional mountaineers, don't necessarily look at the new ways of climbing the big mountains. And Reinhold Messner does say that without possibility of death, there is no adventure. And people with the new technology and every possible help that we have out there in the wilderness, they forget that you have to be self-reliant out there. And it's just the new way of, and I think some of the things have to change in that respect. I'm probably getting off course a little bit to what we're talking about, but I think self-reliance and not putting other people in danger because you went out to do something, it's a big thing. And that was on the back of my mind when I was out on my, very remote area on my mountain bike. That was on the back of my mind all the time. I had to be self-reliant. I did not want to have anybody come and rescue me just because I did something stupid.
By some of your family's accounts, the trip you did was not the smartest trip. And I think you had to keep the news from your parents even for a while. But before we dive into that, I do want to say, was mountaineering a big part of your story before this experience? Because, your adventure was bikepacking. Obviously, mountains were in your life and you went to Tahoe for that reason. But how closely did you follow Messner's style and influence?
I did a lot of mountaineering. I did a lot of winter mountaineering where I had to learn about my own limits was that I don't perform very well when I get really cold. I get hypothermia very easily. When I was ski racing, I had frostbite my feet and my hands. Many times, actually, I had my frostbite on my hands. That can be very painful when you're exposed to cold weather. So I quickly realized I don't do too well on high-level mountaineering freezing conditions. I mean, I've always climbed, but not in the Himalayas or the real big mountains. But yeah, mountains were always a huge part of my life. I did more rock climbing, but you know, in the winter we did a lot of backcountry skiing, and that also led me into the sport of extreme skiing when I came to Tahoe, and that was when the whole word of extreme first popped up on the radar with the North Face Extreme team. I was a part of that. It's all by default, you know, it's just wherever the road kind of takes you. But I did have the skills. I was a, you know, good skier, and I had the mountaineering background, and it's all related to the mountains, including the mountain biking. My mountain bike experience, I had experience of mountain biking before I went on this trip, but I never bikepacked before. So I figured I'll just figure it out.
It's something about you that I realize you kind of go and do things and figure it out as you go. Was that how you got to Lake Tahoe as well, and found that as a new home?
You know, it really was. I had no idea where I was going, really, and what was. I had some connections. It's always been in my nature, even since I was a very little kid. Just wanted to figure things out on my own, for better or for worse. My dad always used this expression, which is in Slovene language, you know, not necessarily in a good way, but he compared me to a mountain goat. Just, I was very persistent. I just went for it. Sometimes that backfired, but as you grow and mature, I also had learned the skills, almost like survival skills. My brother and I were always outdoors. My dad also nurtured us and showed us and taught us. He treated me the same as my brother. Yeah, we pretty much lived in the mountains. And I think it's a great place to learn what your limitations are when you suffer a little bit and get through it. And you learn what you're capable of when you do that, and that's what adventures are all about. You kind of have to, there has to be an unknown factor in the adventure, otherwise it's just a vacation.
Do you take vacations?
Oh yeah, vacations. I'm not a very good tourist. It depends what a vacation is. Vacation for me is being down here, for example, in Baja on Sea of Cortez, and go kite surfing and wing foiling and mountain biking. That's my style of vacation. Do I go to Venice and go to the museums? And sure, I do that. And I, like I said, that was the other side of my upbringing. But I would not go on a vacation into the cities for too long of a time. I have to escape into the nature pretty quickly. I like active vacations. It has to be something active.
I think I'm the same way, and I think a lot of listeners probably are. I do love a good museum. I love a good museum, but it makes me want to get out and usually explore the places that that they're talking about in the museum. So, well, tell me about the idea. We're trying to, you know, what we're doing here is just setting up some of this backstory, some of the influences that led you from your home in Slovenia to your other home in Tahoe, new home, and when you were 20, I guess you had to finish up school in the U.S. Why the U.S. and why Tahoe? I guess the mountains, but just take us through what got you there, and this is all leading to this bike ride that you did many years later, but the idea was early on.
When I was in college at the university back in Slovenia, I studied physical education, and I just wanted to take a semester off. I didn't, I mean, it was pretty common for people to go teach skiing somewhere else. And my father, who used to work for IBM, had a colleague who worked for IBM in San Francisco. And through him, he put me in touch with a family in Lake Tahoe. I was lucky enough. I was going to go with my friend, my college roommate, Yuta. She didn't get a visa, and I did. So I ended up going by myself, which totally changed the course of my life, obviously, because if I came with her, I would not have stayed. She was, you know, it's different when you travel by yourself versus if you travel with a group of people or another person. And at the end of the ski season, after I arrived in Squaw Valley, I felt like I haven't really experienced enough. I was in Tahoe, but I didn't really travel anywhere else. So I extended my stay, went down to the Bay Area in San Francisco area, got jobs painting houses because I was a climber. I was able to hang the ropes off the chimneys, and I was quite an attraction, actually, hanging off the ropes and painting houses in the neighborhood on a climbing rope, and made pretty darn great money. I was also working in shipyards, sanding masts and anything else that I could do to earn money so that I could travel. And then as it so happens, I got an idea to transfer my credits, and I got on the ski team at University of Nevada, Reno. One thing led to another, and I met my first husband. That led me to my 30-year coaching in Squaw Valley and Alpine Meadows ski teams. So that was, yeah, and I ended up raising three incredible children. They're all awesome skiers and even more so amazing human beings. They are now starting their own life paths in their own life.
30 years on the ski team. And now you mentioned your first marriage. I know that biking from Tahoe down to the Baja Peninsula was inspired partially by your first marriage. And can you tell where this idea came from to do this? Because like you said, you're a ski instructor. This is something definitely different than all of that. Where did the idea of bike packing or bike touring down there come from? How long ago did you have this idea and why?
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
The idea originally came more from the dissolution of my first marriage. I was married for 15 years and things just didn't work out, unfortunately. You know, it was a difficult time. I was losing a home that we built, the home that we created with the family. And it was a very confusing time. And a few years prior to that, we built a little palapa on a Sea of Cortez in order to hopefully heal our marriage and just be together as a family. So the idea to ride from one home that I was losing to the home that I loved down here in Baja came. I was at the soccer tournament with my middle daughter, Yana, up in Medford, Oregon. And I always brought a bike to wherever we were so that I could go for a quick bike ride during the soccer games just to get some exercise. I also always carried a little roomy pocket size poetry book. It was springtime and I sat down under the apple tree and this idea literally just popped in my head that I wanted to ride from one home to another just to be alone, to figure things out, to be able to just immerse myself in a movement, because I think in movement there is healing. and I needed to heal from all the confusing things that were going on and from all the pain. But the kids were still very young at that time. So that idea that I wrote down on a back page of my roomy pocketbook just kind of stared at me for the next 15 years. And then to jump ahead, more things happened in my life. I was diagnosed with cancer. I also, I actually had a ski accident, which, yeah, it damaged my leg to such a degree that I was not able to coach anymore, and I wasn't able to ski anymore. And so my ski career at that point was over. And on top of that, just a few months after that, when I was still on crutches, I was diagnosed with cancer. First with breast cancer, and then I, just as a routine colonoscopy, revealed a bunch of polyps. So I was waiting for the removal of the colon. Things were unraveling pretty quickly. And then on top of everything else, when I was dealing with my things, my husband, my second husband, who I love to death and
love your life, as you've called her before.
He is absolutely the love of my life. An amazing athlete, stunningly good looking man.
He's handsome. I'll give it to you. He's handsome.
He's a stud. Yeah, the reality hits pretty hard when he was diagnosed with Parkinson's. I was running out of time. I wanted to do something that I've always dreamed of doing before my time ran out.
Can I ask you this? When you first got the idea 15 years before you did, what was there pressure to do something then? Or did you know that this idea needed to sit? Because I'm on that younger end of, like, kids are young, and I feel like there's a lot of people in my position or people that listen to this show, and we feel this pressure to do something now. Like, if we don't do it now, it's never going to happen. What can you say to folks in that position, maybe about patience or just about letting ideas sit for a while and marinate?
You know, I think you have to be realistic of what you can or cannot do in order to make other people who are in your life take the back seat just because we're selfish, that we want to do something for ourselves. I think it's okay to wait unless, you know, you go to the doctor and they say, hey, by the way, you got, I don't know, 2 months to live or 2 years to live or whatnot. And then you have to make a decision to what you're going to do with that time. But I think it's okay to sit because we have responsibilities and we do have priorities. And I would not trade a minute I've spent with my kids. That was my life, and you cannot buy that time back. There does come the time when kids grow up and they're out of the house, and that time will never come back. I think there are ways to do adventures and with the kids. And I grew up that way. We were a very active family, and I raised my kids the same way. Pack up and not have the schedule. But it's really what shapes you as a person is what you do with your kids when they are growing up. Just being in nature, just doing activities with them, driving them on field trips and school trips so that you know who their friends are, who they hang out with. I always coached, you know, little soccer teams. And of course, I coached skiing so that my kids could ski. I wouldn't trade any of those moments for anything that I have done on my own and by myself later on. I don't know if I got that point, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense that these moments, the thing that's right in front of you, it's not guaranteed to be there forever is what I'm learning, and taking full advantage of it right now, because there will come a time that it won't be an option, you know, like especially with little kids like I have. They're not going to be little for long. I don't understand that personally because I haven't gone through it yet, but people are telling me that. I'm trying to learn from that advice rather than saying, no, I need to do adventures now. Adventures will always be there much longer than they will be small. You mentioned you were a ski instructor for 30 years and taught that. I mean, that's an entire career that you spent doing that one thing. How difficult was it to reinvent yourself in a moment when you had that accident that was from some really bad weather? I heard you tell that story in another podcast. What was that like, having that door almost slammed in your face in a way?
You know, life is unpredictable. Things will always happen that we do not plan on or think about, or, you know, when accidents happen, usually they happen to other people, not to us. And it was difficult. The ski accident, when, you know, blowing out your knee is not an unusual thing for any of the skiers. I mean, that's a pretty common occurrence. My issue was more that the surgery went bad and my femoral nerve got damaged and is still damaged. I still suffer pains from cramping when I overexert, and I still have no sensation in my quad. Those things you don't, you know, plan on. It, and I think what I'm learning and what I have learned through my adversities in life is that we are adaptable. We have to keep moving forward one way or the other, and we have to find a new way. And I did have to build a new identity, being a ski coach and being involved in other young people's lives, and being a mentor was something that was me. That was my identity. And when I lost that, I had to find something new and different that I could, you know, put all my energy into. And for me, that was writing. And I kind of discovered that by default as well when I started writing the blog, just to share my experiences. I thought, okay, I'll just throw it out there and see what happens. And that took a lot of courage. But I got really good response, and people were able to relate. I think if you have stories, not in a sense, you don't send, I didn't want to share the kind of stories like, oh, poor me. I really wanted to share more of the stories of what can you do to come out of this situation that you are in. And to not to sound overly philosophical, yes, you suffer and you just have to keep going, and, you know, life goes on. And if you're fortunate enough that you are surviving what you have gone through, then, you know, you're just a little bit stronger in those broken places. So yeah, I had to rebuild my identity, and you know, I have kind of taken a new direction and thrown myself everything that I had, including all my finances, into, you know, learning to be a new me. And that's hard to do at any age, but, you know, when you're over 50, it can be a little scary, but it's also the most rewarding thing when you realize, well, you know, I have some life still left in me. And it feels good when you're learning something new, when you reinvent yourself and you find joy in the new thing. It's very powerful.
Very powerful. In fact, I want to ask some more about that. So you had this career raising children, life is good. You had a ski accident. Right around then you realized you had breast cancer. And I found out, or I heard a story, that when you were told by the doctor that you had cancer, you were on the phone, and right when they said that, a bird crashed into your window that you were next to, just coincidentally. And that was a very eerie coincidence, shocking coincidence, and it was just obviously very memorable. It just happened at the same time, and then at that right around then, your husband gets Parkinson's. How did you feel through all this? In the sense of like, did the bike tour seem easy in comparison to all this, or at least like a relief in a way? Just go out and do something, think about something else. Maybe it was more possible at that point than it was even 15 years ago from a mental approach, if you know what I'm saying.
There is an old Chinese proverb, without coincidence, there is no story. And I think, again, you have to deal with, that bird slamming into the window really shocked me into reality when you're looking at a dead bird at the doorstep and you pick it up and you go, wow, this bird was just alive a moment ago. And this is me. This is me. If I don't go and do something, I don't think that thought came to me right away. Obviously, I was in shock that, I'm screwed. This is the end of my life. That was really my first thought. Then you just kind of have to go through the motions and one day at a time, one step at a time. When I went through treatments, it was grueling. It was difficult. And then on top of that, I was basically waiting to have my entire colon removed. When I decided to, when I got a little bit better, when my health was, slowly, ever so slowly coming back, the possibility of riding the bike, really, I needed to get away to feel alive, because I didn't feel that I have that energy that I've always had, that internal fire burning and joy. I became kind of depressed and complacent, and that scared me more than anything. Not caring about things, not caring if I lived. I think I needed to have something bigger in front of me that I could put my mind to and my physical body. And I know this is going to sound really probably stupid, but I am a pretty lazy person. I am not a disciplined person. And I thought, well, if I go on this long bike ride, I'll get in shape. I'll be able to write along the way about my experiences, and that will be healing. I was really hoping that the muscles on my damaged leg would come back during the ride. That didn't quite happen, but that's a different part of the story, I suppose. But it was, it was just, once I got the idea, I just couldn't get rid of it. At that point, I really knew that I had to do it. On the other hand, my husband didn't believe I was going to do it until the very day when I rode away from our house in Tahoe.
And I heard that he didn't support it. He didn't really want you to do it either.
No, he did not. He did not want me to do it. He thought it was crazy, and he was just very worried about me. I understood that. I respected that. But for the first time in my life, I really felt I needed to do something for myself. I've always been taking care of other people. I've always been taking care of the kids, and the kids were grown up and on their own. And it was I allowed myself to be selfish, because with his Parkinson's, I knew that he was still in the stage where he could take care of himself. It was a window of opportunity, and I just had to do it.
Not having that support from a spouse would keep a lot of people from doing it. I would have a hard time leaving if my wife wasn't supportive. I am very thankful. She is very supportive of adventures and times away, but that would make it a lot more difficult. But you felt so strongly about it and so right about it, and it wasn't something typical for you, even that maybe it was just shocking for him. But I do want to say too, you are not a planner. You are self-described as lazy. I feel like I need you as a mentor, because I'm exactly the same way. I don't plan ahead very much at all, and I would say I'm fairly lazy too. I'm not disciplined, and I always kick myself for that. What are some tricks and tips you've learned about achieving things while not being naturally a very disciplined person?
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
Yeah. Like, I will never, you know, like people say, oh, you must work out regularly. I don't work out. I do sports. You know, I also live in Lake Tahoe, where there's a lot of uber athletes. And a lot of the times I feel like, oh my God, I am just such a wimp. You know, they're just, you know, in today's world, if you over plan and then things don't work out, there's just disappointment. I think I've always been more spontaneous type of a person, and my husband is as well. I think we're a very good match in that. I have to trust myself that I am a very resourceful person, and maybe in romanticized way, you know, when I read a lot of adventure books, you know, like Shackleton and, you know, John Muir, and just two examples of traditionalists, of people that, I mean, John Muir didn't plan where he was going to go, and he figured things out, and he listened to nature, and he listened to his own abilities. And like I said, I don't want to be over romanticizing, but if we rely too much on technology and planning everything ahead to where we're going to spend the night, and then I think we lose some things along the way. And I think that is the heart of the adventure, is that you see things for what they are when they happen. And you know, if you have to scramble behind the first rock that you find to set up, you know, your sleeping bag and survive the night from the bears walking around you, you know, in California, they're actually, I think the bears are not that dangerous. If they were grizzly bears, I'd think twice.
Right. No grizzlies in California.
Yeah. I think you just have to be resourceful and trust yourself and trust your intuition. Just go for it. I think if we over plan and over analyze, we're never going to do anything. And that's kind of my philosophy. I would never had gotten on the plane when I was 20 years old with just a backpack and a pair of skis. And I have to say, I admired my parents. They let me do, you know, where a lot of parents would say, no, you're too young to do that. You can't just go by yourself. I traversed, the Alps when I was 17 years old, and it rained and snowed on me every day. And I'd be worried about my kids. I do worry about my kids. But my parents let me do it. And I have to thank my father particularly for having that sense of adventure and for knowing me well enough to allow me to do that, to trust me that I will learn from those experiences. And he gave me a tremendous gift. And I think we have to remember that when we're raising our own kids. I mean, your kids are young, and we, as today's parents, we tend to maybe overprotect the kids a little bit. And kids are resilient. They will learn, especially in nature, if we let them.
Well, that's wonderful advice. And you know, we've been talking so much about life and what led up to this adventure and actually going out. Your husband didn't support it. Your kids are out on their own. We haven't talked much about the adventure. without giving too much away of the book, what could you say, dreaming and thinking about this idea for 15 years, doing it and now reflecting on it, what would you say was one thing that you didn't realize would be such a big deal, or a misconception you had going into the adventure, now knowing the experience on the other side?
If you can allow me just one quick step, if I can just say about my husband, because I don't want him to come across like, oh my, that he wouldn't let me go or that he wasn't supportive. I think he was just really worried. He was hoping that I was gonna just change my own mind. He never says, oh, you shouldn't do this, but he let me, you know, do my own collection of the gears, setting up the bike and all that. He didn't participate in that. So I think if something happened, so that he wouldn't feel responsible. But he's very loving, caring, deeply caring person. People to think that he's just very worried. As far as, you know, when we were talking about not planning too much, I think subconsciously I didn't want to overplan or look ahead too much because I didn't want to get discouraged, because it was a pretty big deal of a trip, especially going through the mountains. And when I started poring over the maps and looking at all the mountain ranges, and especially if you zoom into Baja from Google Maps, from above, I mean, it looks pretty daunting. And I just, again, had to just figure it out on my own as I went. Otherwise, I was afraid I was gonna, you know, get discouraged. Had I known how much climbing is there going to be on the average, 3,000 to 5,000 vertical feet of climbing, there it was. On a heavy bike, and when I left, I weighed 110 pounds. My bike, without all the water and everything that I had on that I needed for remote areas of the trails, my bike weighed 65 pounds. And then, you know, for the sections when I needed a lot of water, there was 20 pounds extra to that. So if I even think about that back, I'm pretty amazed that I was able to do it. And I think, to summarize my experience, we are capable of so much more than we think we are. We are resilient. We can deal with things in life that life throws at us that we never thought that we were able to get through. Somehow we have to, and we can, dig deep into the parts of ourselves that we don't know are there. And those are, I think, that's what the true adventure also brings out in us. It's not all fun by any means. If we can trust that we have that side inside of us, that we have that ability to cope and to deal with adversities, that can only give us strength when life gets tough. And I think that is in the heart also of every adventure, that we learn our limits, that we learn to deal with our adversities. And we're surprised of how much we're able to deal with.
Because to me, you know, dealing with normal life sometimes, the folks I hear who do these amazing adventures, it's their normal life that I'm more impressed by, because that's not nearly as, you know, fun to talk about, or nearly as aspirational for a lot of people. But it's much harder, partially for that reason, in my opinion.
I think maybe going on this bike ride, it also allowed me to focus only on the most important things of the day, which is getting from point A to point B, food, water, staying warm or staying cool for that matter, because the extreme temperatures on both ends. I think That is also why people go and climb the mountains and do sports or arts, because it only allows you to focus those things that are right in front of you at that very moment. It's that Zen moment. We don't have time to feel sorry for ourselves. You just have to do it. You know, even if you're just sitting in meditation, where you're allowed to just focus on the moments that are in front of you. Yeah, I think I agree with you. Life on a daily basis, especially, you know, when you got kids and if the kids are sick and if, you know, your spouse is sick, it can be very quickly overwhelming. And maybe that is a bit of a selfish move that I did, but I needed that to survive on my own. I needed this bike ride so I can come back and be a whole person again, to be there for my kids, to be there for my grandkids and for my husband and for, you know, people that I love, my family.
Oftentimes, adventure leads to ideas for more adventure. But for you, I don't know if there's something else on the horizon that you would like to do. If this opened up, like I could do this experience or this adventure or go from here to here by bike. Do you feel like there's another idea in your pocket now? Or are you, for the moment, satisfied with what you've completed? I'm sure the book itself was very difficult to get done. I feel hear a lot of adventurers say that's even harder than the adventure itself. Is writing the book. I don't know. Tell us where you are now.
I have been asked before, and, you know, yes, of course, I would love to have more adventures. There's definitely that side of me that I wanted to, you know, I met some New Zealand mountain bikers from New Zealand that, were doing Baja Divide after I did it, and I invited them to stay at our house here in Baja, and we became friends. And from here, they rode all the way to Panama, and I just wanted to jump on a bike and go with them. I also have to be realistic to where we are in life at the moment, because my next adventure is basically being there for my husband, because he's going to need me more and more. At this point of my life, I think the adventures are going to be with him, and we are going to travel and do things as much as we possibly can while we can. And then I just have to go day by day and see what life throws at me. This summer is going to be an adventure, just traveling around, doing a book tour in our van, and we have fun times already planned for the summer for that. Yeah, we just have to adapt to what kind of adventures we can do together while we can. As far as solo adventures, who knows what life brings, but at this point, my focus is my husband, and for the time being, this book, to bring it to people and to share it with people and hopefully inspire people to go on their own adventures while they can, whatever that is.
Beautiful. I love it. Is there a place you would like for folks to pick up the book specifically? Anywhere you want to point people over another place?
I really like it when people support their own local bookstores. Ingram Publishing Company is a distributor of the book, so it's in the system. The book's title is She Rides, Chasing Dreams Across California and Mexico. So if you walk into your local bookstore, they can find it and order it. But of course, it's also available on Amazon and anywhere else the books are sold. I have a few links on my author's website, which is just alinkavricek.com, to where you can actually click and either order from independent booksellers or from the other sources like Amazon. The other, I have a few of them listed on my website.
Alinka, thank you so much for telling your story on the Adventure Sports Podcast, at least part of it. Folks, I tried my best not to spoil anything in the book, but folks, really check it out. It's a lot of wisdom, a lot of humor, a lot of adventure, and it's something that I hope everybody listening to the show gets to go on sometime, an extended period of adventure that they've been thinking about and dreaming about for a really long time. I hope their life opens up in that way and they take the chance. So thank you for telling us about how you took that chance and took that risk.
Mason, thank you so much for this opportunity to share my experiences. And I hope that I could inspire people to follow their own dreams and go on their own adventures, because life sure is one big adventure. It's fun, and it's not always easy, but it's fun.
Oh, from one lazy person to another, you give me inspiration, knowing that it's okay to not be type A all the time, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes it's okay to just cuddle up with a good book and read and look at the stars or look at the sun and the ocean and be with your people. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for your time.
Yep. All right. Bye.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.